If you have your Bibles this morning, let me invite you to open them to 1 Kings chapter 1. And I feel like I need to share a debt of indebtedness that I owe to Gary Welburn, because Gary has been on me for about 2 years now to preach a series through the book of 1 Kings. I've never done this. So we're going to be going through some new material, not new material in that we haven't read it before or studied it in Bible classes, but I've never preached through the book. So Gary, thank you for prompting me to do this. I'm excited about this particular study, and I've read through the book, and I think we're in for a great adventure in our study through this particular book. While you're there in 1 Kings, I want to read to you from another passage. It's a familiar passage out of the book of Ecclesiastes chapter 3. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to scatter and a time to gather. A time to embrace and a time to refrain. A time to search and a time to give up. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be silent and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. There are a few passages in Scripture that could not better summarize the life of David than this passage in Ecclesiastes 3. Israel's poet king on the one hand and Israel's warrior king on the other. And there is, it's true for all of us, a time to be born and a time to die. We know all the details of our birth, or at least most of us do. I know the exact time of the day that I was born because my parents told me. I know how much I weighed. I know how long I was. I know some stories associated with that first day as my grandparents came. We know a lot of details about our birth. But the details of our death are shrouded in mystery. The time, the place, the circumstances. I know what I want. And I think most of us hold out an ideal somewhere in our minds that I'm going to live to a ripe old age and I'm going to enjoy life right up until the end. And then one night I'll go to bed and I'll just die in my sleep and I'll wake up in the arms of Jesus. That's the ideal. Yet, from what I observe, the reality is likely to be somewhat different from that. 77% of lifetime medical expenses occur in the final year of life for most Americans. We usually don't have the death of our choice. David was about 70 years old when the time of his departure arrived. Here in 1 Kings chapter 2, we're introduced to David not killing a giant and not leading Israel and not marching to victory, but David on his deathbed, surrounded by his family. And here he offers his final words to his successor, the one who would become the great king of Israel, King Solomon. And these are not just random words. This is no rambling speech. You can tell that what David is saying is important. It is prepared. And I wonder, what would I say to my family in those final moments of life on earth? Listen to what David said. 1 Kings chapter 2, beginning there in verse 1. When the time drew near for David to die, he gave a charge to Solomon, his son. "I am about to go the way of all the earth," he said, "so be strong. Show yourself a man, and observe what the Lord your God requires. Walk in His ways, and keep His decrees and commands, His laws and requirements, as written in the law of Moses, so that you may prosper in all you do, and wherever you go, and that the Lord may keep His promise to me, if your descendants watch how they live, and if they walk faithfully before me with all their heart and soul, you will never fail to have a man on the throne of Israel." Boy, what great advice. What sterling advice from a father to a son. David must have reflected in those last days on his own life and offered these words of wisdom to Solomon after such reflection. He had had highs, like the day that, as a young man, he stood before that giant Goliath and defended the honor of the God of Israel. But he had also had lows when he committed adultery with Bathsheba and then murdered her husband to cover up their sin. And he knew from experience the importance of walking in God's ways and keeping God's decrees. What would you say on your deathbed to your children? This is where, in the closing scene of David's life, he should have, having delivered those words to Solomon, should have settled back on his pillow and closed his eyes and breathed his last. But that's not what happens here in the text. He rallies and he continues his speech. He goes on and he says things that seem to move in a very different direction from his earlier words of wisdom to his son Solomon. Continue on in the text. In verse 5 of 1 Kings chapter 2, he says, "Now you yourself know what Joab, the son of Zeruiah, did to me, what he did to the two commanders of Israel's armies, Abner, the son of Ner, and Amasa, the son of Jether. He killed them, shedding their blood in peacetime as if in battle. And with that blood stained the belt around his waist and the sandals of his feet. Deal with him according to your wisdom, but do not let his gray head go down to the grave in peace. But show kindness to the sons of Barzillai of Gilead, and let them be among those who eat at your table. They stood by me when I fled from your brother Absalom. And remember, you have with you Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjamite from Bahurim, who called down bitter curses on me the day I went to Mahanaim. When he came down to meet me at the Jordan, I swore to him by the Lord, 'I will not put you to death by the sword.' But now, do not consider him innocent. You are a man of wisdom. You will know what to do to him. Bring his gray head down to the grave in blood." Then David rested with his fathers and was buried in the city of David. You know, we want to say to David, "David, why didn't you quit when you were ahead?" After those wonderful words of advice and wisdom, you in your last breath, put out a hit list on your enemies. The first part sounds like the death of a man of God. But that last part sounds like something Vito Corleone would say in The Godfather. Well, Joab had not done David right. Joab, on more than one occasion, had gone beyond what David had asked him to do. He was David's great general. But David had specifically said, "Do not harm my son Absalom," even though Absalom was a rebel against his father, was trying to overthrow his father's kingdom. And the soldiers honored David's word when Absalom caught his hair in the branches of the tree. And Joab said, "Why didn't you kill him?" They said, "We wouldn't dare to kill him, not after what David has said." And Joab, ignoring the orders of David, went and threw the javelin into the heart of Absalom. And David wept bitterly, "Oh, Absalom, my son, would that I had died in your place." Even now, as David is dying, Joab, the general, is off with one of David's other sons, Adonijah, planning a coup. He wants to put Adonijah on the throne instead of Solomon. And so David tells Solomon, "You know what to do with Joab. Do it." And Shimei, that man had kicked David when he was down. Absalom had run his father out of town, and as Jacob was fleeing, Shimei ran on the other side of the river, and he shouted across to David, curses. And he picked up stones and pelted the king of Israel and his men with stones, following him along, shouting curses at him. Well, David hadn't responded then, but now he tells his son Solomon, "Solomon, you're wise. You know how to handle that guy. Do it." You know, we often try to impose our will on future generations, just like David was attempting to do with Solomon. We leave wills with conditional clauses that guarantee future orthodoxy. We make requests that pose incredible difficulties on future generations. "You kids keep that lake cabin at all costs. Don't ever sell it." We make stipulations that demand that the business always be run just like Grandpa ran it. But in the midst of the heavy weight that David now places upon his son Solomon to settle all of his old political scores, there in the midst of even that, we find a stark contrast of kindness. There in verse 7, between those two hit lists, we see the words, "Show kindness to the sons of Barzillai." During David's flight from Absalom, he had run all day. He and his men were tired and they were hungry. And Barzillai brought in pots of food, and they brought blankets for David and his men to sleep on. And David remembered that. I remember years back when our girls were young and we still lived in Memphis, Vicky's mother passed away. And only 5 months later, her dad had a heart attack and passed away. And those were hard times for our family. And as we got word and we're leaving, we packed the car and we're leaving to drive from Memphis down to Dalhart, Texas. One of the fellows standing at the door as we walked by, we had lots of greetings and hugs and prayers. He didn't say anything to me. He just reached his hand out and had something in it. And when I took it, it was a $100 bill. Now, I will never forget the name of Milton Chaney. He was the man that did that. You never forget the kindnesses shown you during difficult times in life. And so, in the midst of this dark chapter in David's life, he remembered Barzillai. And he remembered that good food and those warm blankets that were provided by that compassionate man and his family. But David, this mystery man, what kind of a man is David who rose to such noble heights and then fell to such terrible, terrible lows? Through his life he did it. Now on his deathbed, we still see that lingering shadow of a man. On the one hand, full of godly of advice and wisdom, of kindness to those who helped him in the past during hard times, but on the other hand, breathing vengeance as he lay dying. Vengeance toward those who had done him harm. David was an enigma. But aren't we all? Don't we find in our own hearts and lives godly desires mixed with devilish pursuits? Some have suggested that David was simply being used by an instrument of God's justice in mopping up the affairs of the kingdom. Both Joab and Shimei were rebels against God's anointed. And as such, last week we saw God has little patience with rebels. David was a man of war. He had been used by God, commanded of God to oppose the enemies of Israel. He had consolidated the kingdom, all at God's bidding. And he would not be allowed to build the temple because of the blood he had on his hands as a man of war. But even if these final death warrants were part of God's plan, David had committed many other sins that were very far from what God desired. What are we to make of a man like David? In spite of his failures, David never stopped loving God. In spite of his great sins, David always placed himself at the disposal of God, wanting to serve Him until his dying day. In spite of all of his crimes, there is still something irresistibly winsome about this man David. There are two epithets recorded of David. Both in the book of Acts, both in chapter 13 of the book of Acts, there in verse 22, David is referred to as a man after God's own heart. And then later in verse 36, the verse that we began with this morning, a man who served God's purpose in his own generation. I can think of hardly anything that I would rather have on my own tombstone than those two epithets. And I wonder, can that be said of me, a man after God's own heart, a man who served God's purpose in his own generation? When it came time for Michelangelo to carve his masterpiece, he chose David as his subject. Today, 3,000 years after David died, fathers are still calling their sons David. What is it about David? You know what I think it is? I think that in David, we see a forgiving God, who, if He is capable of forgiving David all those sins, If he's capable of calling David a man after his own heart, just might be able to forgive me. There's one last tribute to David found in the New Testament that I want us to consider. In fact, it's on the first page of the New Testament. It's in the first chapter of Matthew's Gospel. And it's in the first verse of that Gospel. And this is what it says: a record of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David. Wow. What an honor. The son of David. David never quite got it right. Right up until the end, he still didn't quite get it right. But he had a descendant who would get it right, Jesus Christ. And in Jesus Christ, through his atonement, we find an ocean full of forgiveness, that it is so great that it can make right a whole world of sinners. This morning, if you need forgiveness, God is full of it. In fact, Micah even tells us that God delights to extend forgiveness to those who need it. He won't withhold. He didn't with David, he won't with you. There is nothing that anyone has done here this morning that cannot be washed clean by the blood of the Lamb. If you need the forgiveness that he freely gives, let us assist you this morning. Won't you come while we stand and sing?